Welcome again back to our podcast, now called Cosmic Careers Podcast with Alistair Brown. That's me, along with Veronica Chiaravalli.
Hello, everyone.
Last week, I said there would be a bonus episode about the moon, but I am unable to present it. But I will do an episode on settling the moon next week. Today, we will focus on space tourism, because that will be the next step in migrating into space.
Tourism is big business worldwide. Over 260 million people are employed in the tourist industry, and worldwide spending on travel and tourism exceeds $1 trillion. It accounts for 11% of the global domestic product, and in reality, is the world's biggest industry. Space tourism will greatly expand all this, with more employment and more demand for exotic adventures. At present, we have trips to Antarctica, climbing Mount Everest, or venturing down to the Titanic. Mount Everest is a pretty big destination.
I've seen a recent picture of tourists, and I mean a long line of tourists at the top of Mount Everest, waiting for their turn to stand on the very peak. It's like Grand Central Station up there.
Now that these other extreme forms of tourism are now common, many people, especially the very elite, will want a new type of thrill to spend their money on. In fact, there is space tourism already. Several celebrities and CEOs already went up into space, including William Shatner, just last October, who played Captain Kirk in the original Star Trek series.
He went up in the Blue Origin capsule, tailor-made for space tourists. Inside the capsule was simply one room with seats and windows all around the perimeter, allowing up to six people to sit around in a circle. But Shatner's flight only carried four passengers. It is a suborbital flight, a rocket soaring up to 100 kilometers, or 62 miles, known as the Kármán line, the very edge of space where you first feel near zero gravity, float around for a few minutes, see the stars in the dark sky, along with the curvature of the Earth.
That is a sign that space tourism is moving into its own. They've been talking about space tourism and how it would accelerate the movement of ordinary people into space.
That will be talked about shortly. First, we will cover the history of this phenomenon.
When did space tourism begin?
I could say back in 2002, when the first tourist visited the ISS courtesy of Space Adventures, but there was a prelude to that. Space camps were established originally for young people interested in space that would undergo mock training as astronauts. This was mostly for kids, but there were programs for adults. The next step were rides on the KC-135, also known as the Vomit Comet, because one could become spacesick on it. One would go up in the plane in the fuselage where the astronaut trainees flew, but with all the seats taken out and padding placed on the walls. As a few astronauts got on board, the plane would steeply climb at a 45-degree angle up to a peak from 24,000 to 32,000 feet, and then descend at the same angle in the form of a parabola, and everybody and everything became weightless and floated around in zero gravity as the plane descended. The plane would then level off, gravity would return, and the passengers, trainees, landed on the floor deck of the plane, and then the process was repeated. A tourist company, Space Adventures Incorporated, commercialized this with the Ilyushin 276 Russian plane. Then Peter Diamandis, founder of the XPRIZE, offered zero gravity rides on a Boeing 727 with his company Zero Gravity Corp, with photos and videos of the tourists' own weightless experience. The price, last I saw, for this experience was $5,400, though it may have gone up since then.
There were failures of startup companies planning to do space tourism. One was XCOR, XCOR.
XCOR had plans to fly one tourist up in a single-pilot, single-passenger-seated plane up to the Kármán line for $100,000 a ride, and there were a lot of takers. But unfortunately, XCOR went bankrupt long before its first planned flight. Many space tourist companies had great plans, but never followed through because of a lack of funding.
Space Adventures sponsored rides to the International Space Station for a range between $20 million and $35 million, one at a time, of course.
This was supposed to be the next big step after suborbital and even Earth orbital flights. The Americans weren't interested, for their priorities were their astronauts doing experiments, but the Russians were, and they had their own habitat. They did have to train at the Russian space agency Roscosmos for a few months. The tourists then stayed a week or two on the ISS between dockings of Soviet capsules. The tourists could see the sunrise and set over the Earth 15 times per day and experience zero gravity. However, you did have to stay out of the way of other astronauts and cosmonauts at work on the station. There have been a total of 7 tourists to the ISS, starting with American Dennis Tito in April 2002. From then until 2009, 6 more space tourists experienced a flight on the ISS, with one tourist, Charles Simonile, going up twice, once in 2007 and again in 2009. They all went up in a Russian Soyuz capsule from the Baikonur launch facility in Kazakhstan.
There is a new space tourist company on the rise, Virgin Galactic.
Richard Branson established Virgin Galactic, a suborbital plane capable of carrying 8 people, 6 passengers and 2 pilots, for a low price of $250,000 per passenger. It would be taken by a White Knight II aircraft to an altitude of 14 kilometers or 9 miles, where Spaceship 2 would then detach from the aircraft, ignite its own engine, and soar up to the Kármán line, 100 kilometers to space. Unfortunately, in 2013, after performing a test flight, it crashed into the Mojave Desert, killing the pilot. Its successor, the VSS Unity, has accomplished successful test flights, but Virgin Galactic still has yet to send tourists into space.
There are at least 3 or 4 other space tourist flights that were successful.
In late 2021, American entrepreneur Jared Isaacman bought a capsule from SpaceX and launched himself and invited 3 other flight participants via SpaceX and orbited the Earth. This flight was called Inspiration 4. In April 2022, a company called Axiom launched a SpaceX capsule called AX1 or AX1 with 3 paying passengers to suborbital space. Both these flights used the SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule, and all these passengers had to undergo a lot of training for these flights.
Tell us about Blue Origin.
Blue Origin topped them all, flying 6 crewed New Shepard flights carrying 31 people, one of whom flew twice. The most recent crewed flight was in August 2022. The first flight flew Wally Funk, a female who trained with the original Mercury crew, but was not allowed to fly because of her gender. And the second flight had William Shatner, who played Captain Kirk on the original Star Trek series. Both carried 4 astronauts, but a few capsules subsequently carried up to 6.
The costs of going into space are high, from $100,000 to $35 million. Depending on how you go. I am also aware that many people would resent this, with the very rich wasting their money. when they could be doing more useful things for humanity.
I can understand that point of view, but incredible as this may sound, these rich people, by taking extremely expensive and dangerous tours into space, are going to pave the way for the rest of humanity.
How?
First of all, the cost of space transportation with all this money from space tourism will go down exponentially. As passengers demand safety and comfort, the manufacturers of these space vessels will have to develop more advanced space vehicles, propulsion systems, protection from harsh environments, and ways to go to and from Earth, mostly with horizontal takeoff and landings, like jet planes. They want comfort and safety most of all, and the manufacturers will have to comply with the space tourists' demands. From here, space transportation will have to improve, diversify, and that means lower costs. Remember the cruise ships and luxury five-star hotels?
Yes, and it's going to be the same thing in space.
Not only does it mean lower costs for more passengers on spaceships, but also lower costs for staying in a space hotel. For spaceships, it will mean faster propulsion systems, but without the threat of high gravity compression against your body. This is because of horizontal takeoff and landing, like a jet plane, that makes the ride smooth. All sorts of spaceships in this category would then be built not just for tourists, but for workers, migrants, cargo, anything you can name with very low launch costs, and the space tourists, as they pay for research and development on these ships, will pave the way.
And it won't stop there. You've mentioned briefly the space hotel. They will be in Earth's orbit and later the moon.
These will be luxury habitats built especially for tourists, with their own bedrooms and exercise and recreation. Perhaps they can venture outside the hotel for a walk into space. On the moon, they could take expeditions, even tour the Apollo landing sites. Another activity on the moon would be dune buggy races.
That would be a great improvement to space habitats in general. When setting up living quarters on the moon or Mars, they don't have to be rustic.
Not at all. Of course, there already are standard safety regulations for space tourists on the books. The space vehicle has to be licensed, pass safety inspections, provide safety features for participants, and require insurance.
I can see that the U.S. government is on top of matter concerning space tourism, as they should be, as well as other countries involved. What will be on next week?
Next week will be what would have been my bonus podcast, but is simply Chapter 9 of my book, Cosmic Careers. We will go into settling the moon. We are advancing up there now, so stay tuned.
Thank you, Alistair, for another interesting podcast.
Thank you, Veronica. Thank you, the listener. And a special thanks goes out to Raphael Rechin, author of The Infinity, The Space Economy and How You Can Participate. I made a few references in his chapter on space tourism. The Infinity is a very interesting book, and I highly recommend it. You can buy it online, and I urge you to do so. And don't forget my own book, Cosmic Careers, which you can also buy online, of which this podcast is based. So order now.
Goodbye, Alistair. Until next time.
Goodbye.